Coming up, Dawn Marie Hutchinson joins us for a discussion on rethinking your architectures. In our discussion segment, we talk about executive concern over security, your golden ticket to higher paying jobs, the death of best practices, and a bonus on some really bad advice. And that's just because we're looking out for you. The news this week, we've got Aperio, Proofpoint, Wombat, Owl, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show about security startups, how to secure your startup, and advice for security startups. It's Business Security Weekly. I need it from the top. Brought to you by, do you have a website, an external presence, employees, an office? Any of these things can be compromised and attacked. How are you defending these assets? Have you penetration tested these public assets? Start 2018 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Business Security Weekly. It's episode number 73. We record this live, and on this program, we're exploring the business of security to better improve the security of business. So we're going to cover leadership, communication, innovation. Join us, map your path to success. I'm still Michael Santarcangelo, and today I'm in lovely and sunny Myrtle Beach, which means I'm actually barefoot right now. Joining me is my partner in crime, always attractive, Paul Asadorian. He's at G-Unit Studios. I'm guessing it's cold up there in Rhode Island, Paul.
Yes, currently it is cold up there.
And I'm not there to snuggle with you.
No, you're not. So. And I was hoping to snuggle with a nice warm cup of coffee, except this coffee's bad. Something. It smells really heinous. This is an emergency. Like
it's been a tough week for you, Paul.
This is horrible. It just ruined my whole week. Coffee is very important to the production of the show. So we're going to work on that.
It's how we stay so perky, except for I don't drink it yet. All right. So let me tell you guys quick. Hack West 1.0, the Wild Bunch, scheduled for March 21st through the 23rd in lovely Salt Lake City. It's going to include training opportunities with Tim Tomes, Fuzzy Knopp, Jordan and Kent from Black Hills Information Security. And check out all these villages. You're going to have a wireless hacking village, a voting machine hacking village, a mobile device hacking village, and you get keynotes from Dawn Marie Hutchinson, our guest here in a minute, and Eve Galperin. So go to hackwest.org to register, and as one of our audience members, you get 25% off if you use the discount code SWHW2018, so 2018.
I was supposed to be in attendance to that conference, and I'm excited about the number of villages, and I guess since I'm not going, that makes me the village idiot.
Yeah, well, it takes a village, right? Something like that? Somewhere around that. All right. Well, so with that sort of a lead in and the brilliant start that we're off to, we're going to reach out to somebody with some more sensibilities here to see where we can go. But I'm excited. Dawn Marie Hutchinson is joining us. She's at Optiv in the I don't remember anymore, Dawn Marie, what you guys call it. It's the office of the something to advise people. But she's smarter than obviously Paul and I combined. And actually, we're going to talk today a little bit about architectures and rethinking stuff. And, you know, obviously on this program, we look at innovation. We love challenging dogma and looking at stuff differently. So, Dawn Marie, welcome to Business Security Weekly. And thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really excited about this. It's interesting you mentioned Hack West. Sean and I have been working on working together for about 18 months. So as soon as last year was over, he was like, can you do it next year? And so I'm really excited about going out.
Yeah, that'll be neat. That's a lot of excitement. All right, so let's talk about architectures. Because as we were getting ready for the show, you said, look, there's some stuff I could talk about, but where I'm really excited, so that's of course where we're going to focus, is on the way that we've done defense in depth for so many years. This year is maybe a chance to do it differently. So tell us about that. Tell us about how we've been doing it and where you see an opportunity for us to think about it differently.
Sure. So this all kind of came about when I started studying the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR. And pretty much it just says you have to have a reasonable security program. And to us in the United States, it's really hard to understand what does that reasonable mean. You know, if I ask my 12-year-old daughter to go clean her room, she's going to come back in 10 minutes and tell me it's clean, right?
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that really reasonableness comes down to who's judging. And so one of the ways we talk about who's judging is we're looking at your security stack and saying, what's there? And would everybody kind of, if you pulled 100 security nerds into a room, would we all argue that what you have there is reasonable? So when we started to think about it and we started to kind of catalog all of the technologies that most organizations have in place, what we're starting to find across my client base is we have lots left in our security infrastructure and the security stack from when we were doing defense in depth. Right, we would build multiple layers of technologies across our organizations to say, well, geez, if this doesn't stop them, then this will, and then this will. But what we're finding now is a lot of those technologies haven't been updated. They're not patched. They're, you know, years behind, and frankly, just sitting there now as a vulnerability. Some other reasons why we're looking back at that stack is a lot of the things we built and put in place are not working for cloud adoption or the insurgence of mobile technologies. Most organizations are saying, we want our employees to be able to work anywhere on anything at any time. So what that really means is we have to go back and look at the infrastructure and say, what's working for us and what's not?
When you ask people that question, how often do you get a cogent answer versus a look of panic what do you mean what's working, what's not working?
I think most people know what's working. I think their fear is, how do I get budget to take it out? I think there's a mismatch between management and security right now, because we would like to buy and implement new technologies, but that involves taking something else out. And oftentimes we have management looking at us like, but we just bought that. We spent however many million dollars on that. And they can understand sunk cost when we're talking about assets on the operations side or in supply chain. Sunk cost is a very common concept across business, except in IT, they, for whatever reason, don't adopt that sunk cost concept terribly well. So what we're finding is, one, do they know what's there? Oftentimes with the turnover in security officials, we're finding that they don't know what's in the stack. They don't know what they're using. I had one client tell me he had a particular proxy solution in place, only to find out that they were in place, but they weren't in line. So he had three boxes that were humming along and keeping the data center warm, but were actually serving no function. So, you know, that's when I kind of started to think about this. We need to look at what we have, catalog it, and get rid of what we don't need anymore.
I love that. I talk to so many people who the way they explain it is, I have all these plates spinning in the air and I feel like I have to keep them all spinning and spin up new plates. So how do we go about figuring out what we don't need anymore?
So my sister actually is an interior designer and she owns Rethink Home Interiors. So she and I talk about this a lot. One of the things she does for her clients is she'll walk in and take everything out of the room, everything out. And she will only bring back the pieces that work for the way the family lives in the space. And, you know, she might repurpose a couple items or refurbish them, fix them up and bring them back in, and some other things they buy new. I'm just suggesting that as security pros, we obviously can't take everything out of the environment and put it back in. That doesn't work. But get a clean whiteboard and say, this is what our security stack looks like. What do we want in it? What's working for us? What works for our business? What needs to be upgraded, patched, cleaned up, and put back? What do we need to just throw out? And what do we need to buy new? And that's just a really good way to look at what do we have and what do we need, what's working and what's not, and help stay in lockstep with our business and where the business is going. If they're going to the cloud, you're going to need to revisit your identity and access management program. Because, you know, historically we bought point solutions when identity was an IT problem, but now with mobility and cloud, it's a business problem and we have to reinvent the way we do identity now. So that's one example of what comes out from this exercise.
I love the simplicity of it. How often do you find then that when you sit down to the whiteboard, the first go round is accurate, Right. Because I always find it's kind of like, you know, you mentioned 12-year-old kids. The way I always say it is that the way it is, or is that the way you'd like it to be? Which is a nice way to ask somebody if they're lying. But I think that because of so much dogma and so much inherited stuff, a lot of the teams I work with kind of think they know how it works, but they're not really sure. And the first time you sit in front of a whiteboard and sketch it out, sometimes I find that they're horrified because they've never looked at it that way. Do you have the same experience, or do you have some insights on how to make that a little easier for teams?
Yeah, so actually it's similar to policies, right? And you should be doing this exercise in concert with what policies do you have in place and what is the expertise of your team. And so I always say about policies, similar to your example, you know, is this what you do or is this aspirational? Because a lot of times we've pulled policies down off somebody's website and we've tried to implement it, but the business didn't buy in. So when I get in front of a whiteboard often with teams, what happens is they start drawing me boxes of servers and they start putting, you know, obscure server names and everything. And I'm a little bit like, that's not what I'm asking, right? We have to up level it. Start talking about the program level. What are our foundational security pieces? What do they look like? How old are they? And start moving the conversation that way. I think I get a lot of aspirational conversation because my feeling is security officials or security teams in general feel very put upon. I think they're feeling under-respected in their teams. And so when I come in there from the office of the CISO, they're looking to impress me. And so oftentimes I have to go through the exercise of saying, all right, well, you say you have this. Have you tested the configuration? When was the last time you did a risk assessment on this segment or something to that effect? And that's when I hear things like, well, actually, we only have that for this business line. Well, okay, if it's not protecting critical business assets, do we know what the critical business assets are? It tends to drive an entirely different conversation because historically we look at the network as one kind of universe of space and we try to put equal controls around everything or over everything and it's ineffective. So what we really want to drive from this conversation is what are your critical business assets? Where is your business going? And let's talk about what that security program is going to look like in terms of bringing, you know, back into the environment, sort of a thing. You know, when we look at the network as a whole and trying to put security controls over everything, lock everybody out sort of effort, what ends up happening is you've put 50 locks now on the door. And if you put 50 locks on the door, it's not a door anymore. Right? You can't successfully or easily come and go from it. And so you've disabled the function of the door. We want to make sure when we're going through this exercise that when we talk about security tools, we're not disabling the functions of the business. And part of this exercise is understanding what assets make the business money, where do we need to make sure there's a little bit more flexibility, and where do we need to put the lion's share of our controls to make sure we're getting the most for our money for our value.
Well, I think people get stuck in a rut and you end up with a lot of legacy technology and every environment is different. When I worked for a university, you know, their IT systems had a lot of mileage on them and you very often find a lot of disparate systems that have just been there since like the beginning of time. And if you turn something off, someone would scream. But, which I wish I knew back then, what I know now, if you approach them and say, well, I want to just replace, you know, your technology, they would squawk and go, no, this is how we always did things. But if you approach it, how can I make your job better? Like, what are the problems you have with this older technology? They'd be like, yeah, you know what? It could be better. And I'd be like, well, you know, I can help you with that and make it better. In making it better, we then make it more secure. We reduce the attack surface and update the architecture so that it fits with your whiteboarding sessions, you know, that you're doing with folks as well. And that's not often I need to go buy a security tool. It's often just cleaning house. And inherently from that, we become more secure. Do you agree? Is that part of your strategy?
Yeah, and actually that's an important, a really good conversation to have because what we discovered when we started walking down the path with GDPR with our clients, so we start with data mapping and doing some data flow diagrams because you have to, in GDPR, you have to validate the lawfulness of the collection of the data. So you've been given the data for a specific business purpose and you can't use it for anything else. So when you go through the process of data mapping, what I'm finding is most of my clients have about 10% of their business processes or applications are collecting data that it doesn't use. The application doesn't need, the business person on the other side of the screen doesn't need, it's just the way they've always done it. So what I'm finding is, you know, I keep saying we can spend $20 million to encrypt everything in your environment, or you can spend $100,000 and get a new API that provides you the same level of data input and interaction with an application and reduces your threat footprint. And a lot of companies are looking at some of these business processes and fixing them by rehabbing the technology, by changing what they've got, because this is the way we've always done it is the most dangerous words in the world. But then also when you consider that shadow IT was born out of needs not being acknowledged by IT, right? That's that shadow IT is the business telling IT they're not giving me what I need, so I'm going to go get it myself. And so this facilitates conversation that lets IT know what the business needs and gives the expertise to fix it and give them something better, do better, and at the same time remove some legacy assets from the environment. Because I think no matter what organization I've been in, as soon as I go and tell them that they've got a system on their network that can't be patched because it's too old, they say, why? And I say, you've got an application sitting there that the business needs. And they go, well, why do they need it? Right. And so at the upper levels, they're going, well, just fix it and get rid of it. But at the lower levels, they're saying, this is my precious. Right. And so they need that application. But we can spin up, we can grow, we can build a new application, we can buy a new application that does the same things, provides the same level of, flexibility that they need. They just don't know they can do that. And so part of this exercise is facilitating conversation around what can we get rid of and how can we help you? That's the taking things out that don't work for us anymore or refurbishing things and bringing them back in.
I can imagine a lot of people listening to this right now are going, yeah, 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 yeah. And then the minute you say, okay, so you've got to stop, slow down, pause long enough to sit and have this conversation. And I now see a lot of people going, oh, well, that sounds great. I wish we had time to do it. And I always look at it and I wonder, how can you not have time to do it? But Dawn Marie, when you work with people on this, how do you help them understand this is so essential to their success that they can't afford not to budget the time to do this?
Well, I think that's a really interesting conversation because I think people get bored at their jobs. They have their day-to-day functions that they do all the time and that's boring. And then a new project comes around and exciting and new and they want to do the project. But it's not the best use of them to do it that way. So using staff augmentation, using integrators, using consultants to help with those projects frees you up so that you really do have the time. I think they always say if you've been caught and you've had a security incident and they turn to you and they say, well, why didn't you implement the technology? The answer can't be, I didn't have time, I didn't have money, or it didn't work for the business, right? Like there's kind of three critical things that lawyers want to hear, and they don't want to hear you didn't have time. They don't want to hear you didn't have money, and they don't want to hear that you didn't want to, right? So you have to find the time, and the way you're going to find the time is making sure that you have the right people working on the right projects at the right time. So the use of integrators, consultants, and other kind of technical experts to do your project work will help put your people in positions to interface with the business, because we need the on-site resources. I need the client resources to be committed to working with the other internal business units, because me coming in from the outside, I can't possibly know the way your business runs the way you do. I can't possibly know the infrastructure the way you do. And I need that person to be leading the ship, not with their hands in the wiry bits trying to stand up a new server.
That's a great point. I mean, like, I like that. I think a lot of people, I think that resonates with them. How quickly do you tend to see they experience the benefits of this?
So there's kind of two things there, right? So the first is, when does the IT team experience the benefit? I think it's painful at first. And one of the reasons it's painful at first is a lot of the technology that we're looking at, a lot of the lift doesn't fall on the security team. And it falls on IT partners. And so I think there can be a lot of rub, a lot of grind going there, because they too have day jobs. So I think initially there's a lot of friction for activity like this, because everyone is going to tell you that whatever that tool, whatever that thing is they need, and it's critical to their business. And some of it just comes from a place of comfort. Some of it comes from a place of security. Like, no, you can't replace that tool because that's my tool. And if you replace that tool, you can replace me. Right. So I think there's some insecurity for folks when we start to talking about taking out technology. So making sure that everyone on your team is receiving the right amount of training to still feel useful and to still have a role, even though you're getting rid of some of these technologies. So I think that that's important. But to your point, I think we start to see efficiency really quickly, because when you start taking items out, you're going to reduce you're going to reduce the noise on your network. You're going to reduce the noise in your log. So you're going to automatically start to see some efficiency come in. If you work with automation and orchestration tools, you're going to see some automatic improvements in the way they're receiving, sending, and communicating information. So reaping the benefits fairly quickly internally. As a business unit, though, to the business area, it's all going to be unseen to them. And that's a very difficult place to be for the security office, because we like to project metrics. We like to talk about the things we've done and how it's improved the business. Unfortunately, for some of this stuff, we're not going to see it. Instead, we're going to be able to say, well, we took a critical system off the network and we gave you this. And they're kind of going, well, we didn't want that. We had the old thing. You know, so being able to communicate and get the business excited about what you're doing is going to be really, really important. Communicating the value of your security program through every project is more than just metrics. It comes down to telling the story of what you're doing. And hopefully you can use kind of some of my little stories here to help make that point at home.
I think Michael's going to completely disagree with you on that.
Yeah, as I'm sitting here taking notes. Well, you know, it's interesting because you talk about your stories, and I got thinking about what happens when you can walk into a room and you take everything out, you put back in just the stuff that you need. The people who embrace minimalism, they find it's cheaper to maintain, it's easier to clean, they're healthier and happier in the space. And that's basically what you're talking about, right? It's a nice way to go in and envision what you need. It's a very practical way to get rid of the stuff that you don't and figure out how to tell the story better. But I gotta think too, some of that benefit is less stuff to maintain, less alarms going off, less wasted time in places. If that doesn't make you feel better, then, you know, do it again. Get rid of more stuff, right?
Right. Right. And kind of coming back to that, my original point was people feel bored in their jobs. They're doing the same things. You're giving them something new. You're invigorating them in doing some of these changes. I went to business school at St. Joseph's University, and we had a CEO come in and speak to us. And he said, one of the things he does right away when he takes over is he has the entire building painted. He said, nothing communicates change to people like the smell of fresh paint. And you think about that for a minute, you're like, yeah, you know what, that's kind of true. But if you've thought about how you've painted your house or something, or the feeling of your desk when you've just cleaned it, you're getting that same, things are new, things are different, things are great. It's giving you a positive vibe. Whereas when things are cluttered, things are dirty, things are dark, you don't get that same positive vibe. So at risk of sounding just a little bit soft, don't forget there is some emotional value to cleaning house.
I would never call that soft. That's the quickest way to piss me off is to call it soft skills. So I'm with you. This is great. And I love the approach. Paul's joke there was, I mean, it sounds like we've talked together for years. So I'm obviously a big fan of it. It's been great having you on the show. I think it's gave people a lot of stuff to think about. Any parting thoughts? Obviously, they can check you out at Hack West 1.0. But where else can they find you or get more of your ideas?
So I am CISO_advantage on Twitter. I love the Twitters. I just adore my Twitter community. You can also find me at Optiv's Office of the CISO. So just to clarify what that is, we're a team of former chief security officers, and we work with our clients mostly just to hug it out. That's kind of my roughing joke, but being a chief security officer is a very difficult job. And if you have access to other people who have done it before and who have the perspectives of numbers of other clients, current clients, that they can help you figure out and solve some of your problems, then you should take advantage of that. So I've never worked with a smarter and more established team than Optiv's Office of the CISO. So reach out to your local Office of the CISO team. Be happy to help. Look at board decks. Am I saying the right things? Why am I not getting my message through to my boss? You know, those kinds of things. So happy to reach out, or happy to communicate anybody who wants to reach out. I'm also on LinkedIn, but you can just look me up by my name for that.
And CISO underscore advantage. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on Business Security Weekly and giving our leaders something to think about, to rethink. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to get Paul's insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. I know you're not going to want to miss it. We'll be right back. All right. So before we get to our article discussions, this is one of the segments, and we're going to rotate this in from time to time. The idea here is let's go pick stories. Let's go pick topics. Let's go pick things that are interesting. It's not the news as much as it's insights that other people are sharing that are going to help us across that spectrum of leadership, communication, and innovation. But before we do that, two quick announcements, actually an announcement and a thank you. InfoSec World, that's March 19th to the 21st. So basically, you could go to InfoSec World and then you can go to Hack West. That's basically how you can make those things work. InfoSec World is at Lake Buena Vista, Florida, aka Disney World. It's at the Contemporary Resort. It's a fantastic layout. It's a lot of fun when you're there. And as one of our audience members, as part of the Security Weekly family, you get 15% off the InfoSec World 2018 main conference or World Pass. Use the code OS18-SW. That'll be in the show notes if you want to cut and paste that over. You're going to get talks from Adrian Sanabria, Diana Kelly, Ed Moyle. They've recently been on the program. Jennifer Manila did an absolutely great interview with us here a couple weeks ago. Joseph Zacharias, Mark Arnold, Matthias Madow, and Summer Fowler, who Paul just interviewed on Wednesday. And I thought it was an absolutely fantastic conversation. And we learned that Paul has a deep affinity for best practices. So he's going to love the story I put in there this week.
I hate best practices and I hate defense in depth. And I really thought that I didn't envision myself reaching this point in my career.
Oh, I know.
And being so curmudgeon-y that I hate those terms. I kind of had a more analytical approach to those terms now, which has just really manifested itself into hatred.
It's so funny, Paul, how many times I will say to somebody, I never set out to be provocative. I've never set out to be contrarian. But I just got to tell you, and I think it comes, I think you and I are at the age now where we're allowed to sit on the porch and spray people if they come on our property and yell, get off my lawn.
Yeah,
so congratulations. We've made it.
It's a turning point exciting. In my career.
Hey, I want to do a special thanks too, Nigel. I'm not going to mention your last name because I don't know if I got permission for that or not. But Nigel was listening because of our nonstop discussions of Never Split the Difference. Nigel went out, he got it. He's an audiobook listener. And then he sent me a copy of his mind map and he crushed it. And then we got talking about the value of mind mapping while listening and different books and things that he's done. He actually went out to GitHub, found a bunch more. I had never thought to look for people mind mapping books and then finding a collective way to share it. So I think that's freaking fantastic. And I love mind mapping. And in fact, he gave me a couple ideas. One of the things we're going to start doing is we might do a segment now on mind mapping, just the power of it. And after that great conversation with Don Rhee, we might end up actually doing a segment on some basics on, you know, how to whiteboard a session like that. Because as she pointed out, the way that we tend to go at it versus up leveling it a little bit different. So Nigel gave us some ideas for some segments and you're going to see some of those coming up. And he's on to Unbeatable Mind. And it's great because I just picked it up again and my family is going through Unbeatable Mind. I think it's great. And I actually, for that one, I've got both the Kindle and the audio version. And what I'm going to try there is both, like listen and read at the same time. And I'm going to see what comes up with that. Paul, what are you working on next?
For what? I'm working on a lot of things.
Books.
Oh, books. Finishing
you want to
up,
do Unbeatable Mind with us?
Yeah, I'm finishing up Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after that, whatever you recommend next.
Let's do Unbeatable Mind. I'll wait for you. I'll sync up with you and we'll work through that one together. And then Nigel, let us know how it goes for you. Anybody else listening in. But, you know, also, we're serious every week. So you've seen now we're tightening our segments. We're doing three segments a week. Sometimes it'll be a double interview. Sometimes, in fact, we've got somebody we're real excited about interviewing next week. And we're going to do that as a double feature interview. And believe me, you're going to watch both and thank us for it. But then, you know, we're going to work in some other stuff here. Paul and I have been sorting out what we call the recipes and some different ways to take a look at it. And some of you have written in. In fact, I'll tell you something that Matt Alderman and I and Paul are already working on is How do we answer the question, what problem are you trying to solve successfully? Somebody wrote in, Dr. Fred and I go back a long time, and he said, hey, all right, I'm bought in. By the way, most people don't get it right. What do we need to do to get it right? So we're going to start doing things like that. And I've got about 6 or 7 different ideas or suggestions that we will work into rotation over the coming months. If you've got ideas, hit us up. I love these conversations. And of course, we want to make sure that we're helping you as you do these types of things. So I'm excited about that. So Paul, in terms of some of the articles this week, I put this one in. I've started following the channel a little bit more, partly because I think it influences the way that we do a lot of stuff in security. And this one was interesting because they went out and they looked at CIOs. They looked at CTOs. They weren't looking at security people. They looked at it was about 1,000 different organizations, and they said, hey, what's up? What's on your mind? And 60% of the CIOs and CTOs, 49% of procurement, said that security is one of their top three biggest challenges. So the reason I'm putting this in there is because we constantly feel this struggle, right? And Dawn Marie said, look, a lot of times on our teams, we feel underrepresented or underrespected. There's a lot of pressure on us and everything else. And I'll often hear somebody utter, well, they don't understand. They just don't care. But what I'm telling you is objectively and subjectively, people care. They're not sure what to do about it. And what's happening here then is that it's driving that push to the cloud. And I thought that that was kind of interesting. It's also driving this push to supply chain optimization, connected workforces, cloud data center transformation, digital innovation. So my question, if you're listening to us now, are those on your radar? Because that's what your organization is potentially worried about, right? This is definitely one trend line. It might not match yours, but go back to that conversation we just had. Are you lining up to the right stuff? Do you know where your organization's heading, and are you focusing on those things? And then I guess PS, what can you kind of stop in the process? It was pretty short. Paul, was there anything in here that kind of stood out to you should pay attention to that? Or do you even agree with it?
I mean, I think that I'm not sure what what's the problem. If 49% of procurement security is their top three biggest challenges, like my question is why? And more importantly, like what problem are you trying to solve? Security is a really big overarching subject matter and subject area, but like what problem are you solving, and why are you struggling with it would be my question.
I think you just put your finger on something really important. Nobody knows, mm-hmm. right? I think that's the thing. You and I have talked about this over the years. If you just say security, okay, I want it. Also, right. Yes, it's a problem. Also, I totally understand it, except for I don't know what you're talking about, right? Yeah. And you can make all of those statements at the same time and be completely correct. And but I guess the point then is, if you're in the enterprise today and you're following the insights that we're happy to bring to you, you need to be conversant on that. So go ask them if they're concerned about security. And when they say yes, say, cool, what are you concerned about? What does that mean? How can I help you? What do you want to understand better? Because you know what? I'm concerned too. And I'd love to make sure that we're aligned. Say the word alignment. People like that word a lot.
People like that word. Yeah, and that has to come first before you make the decision as to whether or not you're going to outsource it, I guess would be the term that I would use to describe what this article is talking about. Channel services is kind of a weird term to me.
I thought it was kind of weird too.
Yeah, my mind goes to channel sales. Mostly because of my background, but before you make that decision whether or not you're going to outsource something or do it in-house, you need to understand your risks, your problems, your challenges at a much deeper level before you then make the decision to like what you're going to outsource. Kind of a weird article if you don't do some of those necessary steps to understand the problem.
That's right. So and so what I would do is I would use this article as a launching pad internally. Like, let's go ask about connected workforces. Let's go ask about what that means in our organization, how important it is, and what we could do from a security perspective to make sure we achieve that goal and we don't put ourselves at any unnecessary risk. By the way, I get it if you're cringing right now, but I'm going to have, I didn't say you weren't going to increase the risk, but you just got to understand it and make sure that people are better off for it. And I think this kind of feeds into this next one. It's fun. It was out of the Boston Globe. The golden ticket to a higher paying job. You need hard skills plus social skills. You know what I loved about it? It didn't call them soft skills for a change. It basically said, here's the deal. And it called out things like technology and security and said, look, if you've got great technical skills, you're going to be in demand. But if you want to take it to the place where you're highly sought after and get paid more, you've got to have the social skills. And I loved how it described it. You have to understand other people and understand where you then fit in. Oh, what a great way to think about it. And then it kind of points out, by the way, don't tell us you can't do it. You can. You can absolutely develop these types of skills. I always mock. I mean, you know this. I think it's harder to develop soft skills than it is hard skills. I think hard skills are easily taught. But that's the golden ticket. You want to get paid more, develop empathy. Develop the ability to understand and communicate with people, which, by the way, go read Never Split the Difference, and you'll understand how to do that a lot better.
Yeah, I don't think that I wouldn't take that as meaning that it doesn't mean you have to be technical anymore. I think you can stay technical and develop social skills. It doesn't necessarily mean, well, you know, if you're on this career path in security and you want to move forward, you need to develop social skills so that you can be a manager or C-level. That shouldn't be what the article is getting at. It's more about understanding people in empathy and having social skills to achieve your goals. And if your goals are to stay technical, that's cool.
I think it's a great point. You know, I'll tell you, Paul, I've sat in a meeting. I think I've said this before, too, on one of our programs on the network. I was in a meeting about a year ago where the person said, it's harder for me to find somebody who has project management chops who understands security than it is to get a security engineer. Like, there's a subset of things. And so I'm glad you made that point, because what I took this as was, if you want to be better even at your technical aspect of your career, you still have to understand other people, or how to explain it to other people, or figure out where you fit in their success. You could be technical for the rest of your career, but your success at some level is still going to be your ability to influence outcomes or get invited to the meetings or at least understand how to participate successfully. Don't have to be the CISO or even in a leadership position for that. But security doesn't exist in a vacuum so much anymore. So kind of works out that way.
I think that I wouldn't say that everyone has the ability to develop social skills. I would say everyone who wants to and wants to put the work and effort into developing social skills certainly can. You have to have that desire.
Yeah, it's the willing and able thing, right? Mm-hmm. You can be willing and able. You can be or the opposite is unwilling and unable. And then, of course, you can be unwilling and able and willing and unable. But yeah, for the most part, it's more of a, let's just quickly debunk, you're either born with it or not.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Born with something. Yeah. If you have a desire, you can improve on that. Mm-hmm. And if not, nothing in the world will help you. All right, so this next one, what really drives sales growth and repeat business? Here's what I liked about this, and I copied this line out of it, attributed it, and it's right in our show notes. Content builds relationships, relationships build trust, and trust equals sales. So if you're listening to this right now as an enterprise team, you're like, what does this matter to me? Well, I always look at it for two ways. One, what a great way to take a look at your vendors. Go take a look at how they're educating you. Go think about if you trust them or not, and if that's good for them or not. But if you're inside the organization today and you're in security, you're also in sales. I know you're going to bristle at that. You hate it, etc. But congratulations, there you are. So think about your content. What are you educating people about? And are you doing it in a way that they understand, or are you doing it in a way that you understand? Or are you just doing it to get it done and you're banging it out and shipping it? And then how are you building those relationships? You know, we gave some of this advice a couple weeks ago, and we said, what meetings should you go to? And one of the pieces of advice was, if there's an opportunity to build a relationship, take that meeting. That's a good use of your time. So I looked at this entirely through the lens of enterprise leadership and said, are we properly educating the people around us, right? That's, I always look at the infinite game. Are people better tomorrow because of what we did today? If so, then you're building that trust up. And, you know, we'll say here it equals more sales. I'll say it equals more invitations to the right meetings. You want to be respected in the executive suite? Be the person who's doing that, building that trust. When they trust on you to come help protect things and get them where they want to be faster, you will be invited, period.
We talked about methods and tactics to retaining customers, Michael. And I don't remember what the context was of our discussion. I mean, we know it's important in you know, how it plays out for customer retention, I think, is different for every business. There's certainly a lot of functions that play into repeat business, as this article mentions. I think your support team is certainly probably most critical, I would say, to repeat business. There are other factors as well. In fact, we've spoken about how some of your marketing activities certainly play into keeping customers retained and keep reminding them of the value that you provide and making them aware of maybe new areas where you can provide value. So,
you know, it's interesting that you say that, because when we look at content, I recently did some training with a sales team, and when we're doing a role playing, I kind of stopped the role play and I said, you know what? I haven't heard you guys praise anybody yet. You haven't said, wow, that's awesome, or great job, or I love that. And they were all kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Listen, nobody wants to be told that they suck. And when they're excited about something, they don't want to hear that they did a bad job. And so, yes, a lot of marketing is definitely about reinforcing people who already made the decision that they made a good decision. So if you're in a security team today and you're saying, well, what do I need to do for content? Oh, I'll tell them where they screw up. I'll tell them what they're doing wrong. I'll tell them how to do it right. Yeah, okay. You know what you should do? Go find somebody who did it right, tell their story, a real story, and applaud people. And when you sit in the meetings, don't say, well, let me tell you all the reasons that's not going to work. Start out by saying, awesome, I think our customers are going to love this, or I totally get what we're doing. I'm not saying lie. If you don't get it, you don't get it. Ask the right questions. But if it's good, take a minute and acknowledge the good work other people are doing. If they've invited you, if you've come to the table early enough that you feel you can be effective, praise them for that. Tell that story. That's the kind of content you want out there. And that reinforces the people who work with you that they're also doing a good job. That's a great point, Paul. I like that a lot. All right. Is the problem incompetence or lack of training? Now, this is a longish article. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I've been pretty vocal and outspoken for the last couple years now that we do not face a talent gap. We do not face a talent shortage. And every now and then I will point out that almost every other industry and sector and size of organization lately proclaims the same. And frankly, it's lazy and I'm tired of it. And I get it. Somebody right now, you're cussing at the listing, or you're throwing something at us, and that's fine. And send me a note. Convince me I'm wrong. But let me put it this way, because this passage I copied out of this, I absolutely love this. Let's put it another way. If your company's work requires only skills that people should already have, those skills aren't unique and differentiated, and it's unlikely that your company is either. And if they have the right skills, then they probably have a job already. So why would they leave to join your company? This is where I think we have the biggest opportunity in security today. I don't see a lot of people putting thought into their recruiting programs with an eye toward what aptitudes do we need, what skill sets is the minimum need, and then how do I develop people? How do I get them to the right place? And by the way, as they level up, as they produce, as they explore, right, how do I keep them engaged? How do I make sure they don't get bored? How do I keep them where they go? And I've always looked at this. This wasn't in the article, at least not that I saw, but a lot of people have often said, and it gets attributed to a lot of people, what if we train them and they stay and they leave? And you just answer it with, what if you don't and they stay? I think this is, I don't see a lot of people, Paul, that have what I would consider a thoughtful training and development program, right? Training, job-specific skills, development is the continued application of those skills over a period of time in your context. I haven't come across a lot of people, I think, that do this well. Those that have, by the way, never heard them complain about not finding enough people, not once.
Yeah, I think it's, for certain roles, it's harder to find people because there just aren't enough of those people. I guess that's where we might slightly disagree on this subject.
Well, like what, Michael, though? Give me an example.
So in our industry today, and it's been a little while since I've looked at it, but I still believe it's true today that there are not enough people with the skill, two different skill sets. One, malware reverse engineers, and number two, cloud architects. I think those are, certainly malware reverse engineering has been around for some time, but it's really hard to find people with that, with those sets of skills.
But is that something you need at the enterprise level? I mean, should every enterprise team have a malware reverse engineer?
No, but security vendors, certainly, that is a hot commodity today.
All right. Actually, I buy that. I certainly buy it. There are certain skill sets that are going to be in demand or hard to replicate. But then this is where, right, when we talk about the innovation part of the show, so who's got the training on that? Somebody's got it figured out and has the training on it. That's where you should be focusing, right? And minting out people that have that ability. And you're right, cloud security architect. I mean, that's a newer sort of thing. And what I've often looked at with the cloud is functionally, things are the same, but technically in the way that we achieve those functions, it's definitely changed. So again, I can see where that that shifts it, but that doesn't, to me, that doesn't signify that we have a broad sweeping talent gap or talent shortage.
I agree. A broad and sweeping is not the case. In certain isolated areas, we certainly do. And I think that we can certainly work to close those gaps by, as you, like you said, Michael, offering training and development in those areas. And by having a workplace in security today, whether you're an enterprise or a security vendor, that is developing people with those skills is important. You may retain those employees or they may go somewhere else. But the important part is that you have a process to build those skills that we are in need of today, and not just throw your hands up and say, I can't find a cloud security architect, right? That's not the right answer. Yeah.
If you can't buy them, mm-hmm. as crude as that is, then build them. You know, that should be our new best practice. What do you think, Paul? Best practices, are they dead?
So I hate two things about this. First, I hate best practices. Second, I hate declaring that things. I hate declaring that things are dead because I think it's ridiculous.
That's part of the reason I had to put this in for you, because it hit. I mean, you and I couldn't be in more alignment on best practices and are dead. But here's what I did like about this, because I thought for the first time somebody did a decent job of explaining the concept of a best practice. And if you're in a much more established or industry or organization, it's the idea is, if you follow this sequence, if you follow this, you will get a more consistent outcome, whatever your particular outcome is. Awesome. Totally love that. But, you know, the way I look at it, seems the way you look at it, is in security, we're still so immature that to call anything a best practice is just silly. I usually just call them industry standards, or, you know, if pushed, I'll call it a good practice, but that still feels silly.
I like guidelines. Guidelines are good.
Yeah. You know, I always look at it from a perspective of a guideline. And by the way, this might work. So if you get technical on policies, right, which are overarching, you have standards, which are specific and measured against, but not a how to. They're the what, not the how. Then you have procedures, which are the how, but they have to be adhered to with no violation. Or you have guidelines, which are also the how, and I don't really care if you follow them or not. So, yeah, I think the practices, they could kind of fit into either of these. But the thing is, everything is changing so fast that nothing is best. So what they said was, the answer is imagination plus experience equals innovation. I'm not even sure what to think about that, but what do you think, Paul?
That makes my brain hurt. I think best practices, the reason I think that Michael and I don't want to speak for Michael, but my primary point of frustration when we use the term best practices are, you want to understand what other people are doing that are successful so that you can just copy that and move forward. And that doesn't usually work for organizations, because everyone's environment. I mean, I hate to say that we're all special snowflakes, but again, everyone's organization and security architecture is a special snowflake. And so what other people are doing that are successful maybe should be a guideline, but it's certainly not the best practice for you. The best practice for you is what you define based on a whole set of things that we talk about on the show every week and some of our other shows as well.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about this is it goes back to the word you and I are in love with right now, which is context. Their context and your context are different. As a result, what worked for them may or may not work for you. I see this all the time when it comes to leadership and communication, and there's times that it makes me actually crazy. Here's what you do. Take our advice. Just start asking better questions. Start with our favorite. What problem are you trying to solve? And then pause long enough for that answer to surface.
I also think that things are never really, I hate the term dead, right? Because they're either things are misunderstood or they're obsolete in this context. Like when we talked about intrusion detection, it wasn't that it was dead, it was obsolete, and newer things emerged to meet the newer challenges that are very much a similar premise, but the original way that we did things was somewhat obsolete. Also, I think that things are largely misunderstood. Like people may claim threat intelligence is a great example, right? Threat intelligence is dead. Threat intelligence is useless. No, it's not. It's just misunderstood in how you should be using it, or considering using a particular technology is just largely misunderstood.
Great point. All right. I threw this bonus in. I'm obviously always interested in being positive and showing people all the bright sides of stuff. I don't think there's a lot of value in tearing things down, except for I read this one. And I just wanted to point something out because, you know, what we look at here a lot on this program and across our entire network is how do we make those better connections? There are people in the security industry that are solving great problems and they can help you. And there's a lot of folks in the enterprise that are trying desperately to solve these problems. And the way that we do this, and we talk about it a lot, is through your point of view, which is your understanding of the problem, and your value proposition, which is your promise to solve that problem for that person in a way that creates value in context or in consideration of the impact of your solution. And what we find consistently is the people who get that right, if you can talk about your problem, you've isolated it down, you can talk about it intelligently, that's exciting to us. And then when I go, wait, how'd you do that? Then let's go talk about the specifics. So this basically comes in and it says, here, we figured this out. And it opens, Paul, really well. It starts out by saying, all right, we went up against this other competitor. They were far bigger than us. They were better known. But, you know, it's amazing. When they went into the pitch, they talked all about themselves. And we didn't. We talked all about the problem and the challenges. And we won the deal. I'm going, yeah. And they said, so here's what we learned. From now on, we discredit our competitors. And then we try to differentiate ourselves. Please listen.
Oh God!
There's
don't
nothing
ever use
more
the word
awkward than being on a call where you're complaining about your competitors.
Never discredit your competitors. Wrong move.
Yeah, just stop.
Wrong move. I worked in the a lot on competitive intelligence and positioning in my role at Tenable, right? And one of the things I learned early on is you never discredit your competition. You just don't. One wants to hear.
Think about some of the reasons why.
A salesperson come in and be like, their solution doesn't work. You shouldn't use them, and talk bad about your competition. Big mistake.
Well, yeah. First of all, you don't know who's connected to who. You don't know what they're invested in or not invested in. Also, I think it's a small approach to it. I thought they were on the right path. Go explain the problem. Explain your approach to the problem. Explain your point of view and really get that figured out. And then talk, you know, this is the other part. A lot of people say, well, value props about differentiation. Yes and no. But differentiating because we've got better service. We look nicer than the other people. Yeah, stop. Just knock all that crap off. Here's how you differentiate yourself. I understand enough about your environment that I will help you increase value. And I also understand the impact because friction erodes value. So you could have something that on paper, you know, your value prop says that because the cost of a breach is X, some ludicrous number that nobody believes anyway, that you create value. Yeah, you're full of crap. But if you then also show me how you're helping other teams or helping what I currently have get better or whatever else, oh, you just differentiated yourself because you listened and you gave me something compelling. I think that's how we do it. So anyway, just knock the games off. These aren't the things to do. And I really hate calling stuff out, but we're never afraid to do that. And I didn't want anybody getting into that habit. And if you get someone who does that to you, they're probably not worth your time. Kick them out your office and get back to the things you need to do. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're on time today. This is going fantastic. There's awesome. Some startups and there's some interesting trends that we're going to talk about in terms of who got funded, who got acquired, and what's happening this week. So come right back and we're going to go through the startup and security news you need to know. All right, we're back. Let's go through some of the startup security news that you need to know. There's some trends this week I think are kind of interesting. There's also a phenomenal seed round. I really can't wait to get Paul's take on it. Also, if he's going to use it, because I'll tell you what, the kid's about to drive. I'm interested. But first, let's talk about your endpoint security, and specifically, and kind of like a theme of today, are you testing it? Have you tested your endpoint security solution? Do you know it's working the way that you expect it to work? And more importantly, when you do test it, how are you doing it? Are you just detonating a malware sample? And please tell me that you're doing it in a lab or some other controlled environment. But a lot of people are struggling with this. And the good news is Paul and John and a few other folks named Casey and Mike, they got you covered on this. Paul, this is our next live webinar. So you can sign up for it, securityweekly.com, Red Canary, and you're going to learn about the Atomic Red Team testing approach to it. What are you excited about with this, Paul?
Well, I got excited about this last year because I fell in love with the problem. And the problem is, well, more detailed problem is we're a big company. We got breached. We were in the headlines. We bought a bunch of security solutions. God, those, we kind of feeling that those, some of those suck, but how do we know which ones suck and which ones don't? And developed a methodology and software to fix that problem. And essentially, how do you deploy software into your environment that behaves like malware that lets you test your defenses. I was like, well, that makes perfect sense. That's a problem. We need to solve that. Now there's a whole category of companies that are doing this. Red Canary does focus on the defense, but also adopted some of these methodologies and techniques, made them open source, which is what they're calling Atomic Red Team, to help you evaluate your endpoint defenses specifically. And I think this is a great approach. I love this approach.
Yeah, I got to do the prep call and chat with them a little bit about the approach, and got to ask some questions like, what's the problem you're trying to solve and why? And I love that aspect to it. So it's I'm going to look forward to learning how you guys break it down and take a look at it, because I think this is an important thing. Like I think the ability to test what we're getting to see if we're getting the right results and or to tune it or to get things to work the right way is fantastic. So if you go to securityweekly.com/redcanary, you can learn more and sign up and check it out. So I'll be one of the viewers with you checking that out. All right, so a couple big rounds this week and some exits. So, you know, Paul, when we had Matt in the studio last week, we were talking about, you know, that silly article selling, oh, there's no more 10 times exits and there's no more investment and whatever. All right, well, so this week's going to prove all of that completely wrong. So Aperio Systems, $4.5 million in a seed round. And that's crazy for what it's worth. But look at what they do. They develop and they provide industrial critical control systems to detect artificial manipulations of process data. Now, that didn't make a ton of sense to me, but here's what I liked when I went to their website. And I'm going to be fair. I didn't like their website. It's clean. It's nice. And they make all these statements. But then you get, and this is crazy, you get below the fold. So, Paul, if you're there, you go below the fold and it says, are your systems lying to you? That's where you start. I actually like that. That was enough that I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, they should have put that at the top.
Yeah, like that pulls it in. And then they're like, look, if I can get into your stuff, or if I can change what your sensors are telling you, or if I can hijack into your network, you're screwed. And by the way, we can do this. And then go on. So then they start to talk about, in fact, they ask that question. They talk about the consequences of it. And then they kind of jump a little bit past the solution, which is too bad, right to their solution. But once they've asked that, then I'm in. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And I think, you know, in this space, which is a hot space right now, you probably need a pretty big launch. Their Israeli company, I didn't actually look at deep into who was behind it all, but my guess is it's pretty good play. And I think, you know, our unsolicited advice to them is just push your question to the top. And that's awesome. I kind of dug it.
We need it from the top.
Take it from the top. Proofpoint acquired Wombat Security, $225 million. Best as I could tell, all equity Wombat since 2013 has raised about $10.9 million, so almost $11 million, as best as we could tell, with an estimated revenue. So this is Owler. Take it with a grain of salt, but about $13.5 million. So either way you slice it, this is a hell of an exit. Like, this is freaking fantastic, which means there's probably more. They probably, Proofpoint was probably interested in customer base or subscription earnings or whatever else. There's some ways to make your multiple go higher, but that's a successful exit. So congratulations to Wombat and the Proofpoint team. Proofpoint's been on a bit of an acquisition spree lately as well. And so then I went, well, that's interesting, because Paul, didn't we just talk about Barracuda and how now that Thoma Bravo brought them back private, they're making a ton of acquisitions as well. In fact, just last month, they picked up Fishline. And their big thing was what? For security awareness. And we want to integrate it into the platform. What was Wombat known for? Security awareness. And what did Proofpoint say? We're going to roll that into our thing. I think this is the new trend. So I have a question. Does that mean like this security awareness stuff, is that basically now a feature? And we're going to watch these things get rolled up into other platforms? Do you think this is the beginning of a trend?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about security awareness companies.
You already know how I think about it, so.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. I guess I question sometimes the effectiveness of the program.
I question it all the time.
Yeah.
It's
interesting. At the same time, I do think that not doing it could be harmful to your environment. So having some level of security awareness, I think, is a good thing. Again, I think it comes down to what I talked about before, about, you know, like just figuring out where it fits and the misunderstandings that we have about it, about what it can accomplish for you.
Well, there you go. I think that's the thing, you know, without getting too far afield on this part of the program. Look, security awareness has one single outcome and one single outcome only. When something is out of place, somebody has the confidence to report it.
Right.
Whether it's a phone call, it's a ticket, it's a automated submission, it's a text or whatever else. And people go, oh, see something, say something. First of all, those programs are not nearly as successful as everybody thinks they are. But when they are successful, it's because it's based on generations of us knowing when something's out of place. From a computer perspective, it's not exactly the same as that. And by the way, what happens when you call? I don't talk about it a lot for no reason other than it was a long time ago, but I used to work I volunteered as an EMT. It is terrifying for people to call 911. They don't know what to expect. They don't know what to expect when they call for police or ambulance or fire. They'll do it because we've trained people how to do it, but there's still a lot of nervousness with it. And there's a lot of nervousness when we show up. Okay, well, what's it like calling your security department? And are you going to be berated or are you going to be celebrated or what's the whole experience? Listen, if you're in security awareness today, just go answer those questions. Show me what it's like and then gather that trends and then that can move you into training and other types of things. Here's the trend though that I'm seeing. These larger plays that are also targeting the SMB in the mid-market, they're now acquiring people that have done at least some level of training, some level of automation around the training. I actually think whether the training quality is good or not is less important to these companies. It's that they've already developed the engines. They already have a library. They've got a starting point. And now with a lot more money behind you and a much bigger base, you can always tweak that stuff if you want. So I think we'll see more of it. I guess what you've pointed out is my hope is it gets better. But we'll see. J2 Global, this is interesting because I haven't really tracked them, but they acquired Viper Security. It was undisclosed. Couldn't get a lot of details out on Viper either in terms of what funding they've had over the years. They're based in Clearwater. I remember meeting them years ago and talking to them around the different stuff that they do. But what's interesting is if you go read the press releases, and I put this in there, J2 Global, they put it together with their FuseMail program. And they said, this is great. This is going to give us an advantage. This is going to bring security into our platform. And that not only makes us more competitive and rewards our current customers, but it makes us more attractive to more people. And so this is a great growth strategy. For years, Paul, people have said, you know, security could be a differentiator. And then they get mocked. Well, guess what we're seeing now? Security can be a differentiator. You just got to do it the right way. At least that's what I took from it.
You go to Viper's website, I can't figure out what they do.
No, and it had no mention of it at all. So the whole thing to me was kind of confusing. They're basically virus scanning of some sort.
I think. Is it?
Well, it could be why it was for undisclosed.
Well, I think it goes back to one of our conversations. I think it was yesterday, where it's like, is it an appliance? Is it software? Is it in the cloud? Like, what? Hold on. What the hell is it? And then talk about all your other stuff. But
anyway. I said the word security. I had you at security. All right, log me in. They acquired Jive Communications, which is not Jive. Was it Jive Technologies or whatever? This is Jive Communications, and it's up to $357 million. I think it was like $342 million in cash, and then another up to $15 million in incentives based on performance. But here's the thing, and this is why I point this out. Log me in. So they're the ones, right? We use their technology to do our webinars, and you and I use it quite a bit for the calls that we take. What I didn't actually understand until the last part of last year was they have a number of enterprise solutions, Paul. And they have some that they're at least exploring how they work with security teams and things like that. So that by itself, interesting to me. But the other thing is when we look at this idea of collaboration and unified communication, collaboration, and this big push into the enterprise, as that space is heating up and consolidating, I've talked to enough people in the last couple of years that have really pointed out some of the really scary security things that you can do around this. As we're seeing this get heated up, the security play here is going to continue to matter, right? We've got all these other places where security is becoming a feature, security is becoming important, security is getting bought and folded in. I think we're going to see the exact same thing here. So I'm putting it here because if you're in the security space today, paying attention to things like this is interesting because the likelihood of your organization using it is higher than not, and you need to have a plan to deal with it and to be productively dealing with it. If you're on the innovation side of the marketplace, if you've got solutions that are going to make this stuff better. By better, I mean still able to do what they want, but to secure what we need. I think you've got a great opportunity here to be acquired or whatever.
So I just want to make a point on the Jive thing. Because when you said Jive, I thought of a collaboration software that I used to
use. Yeah, and it's not.
Not that. Jive Communications is a VoIP software provider. Two totally different companies. Yeah.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep. All right, so this last one. Now, this was interesting. And it was interesting because I read it, and then I went back, and I've read it again. So first of all, it's an $18 million seed round. Let that sink in for a second. $18 million seed. It's a company called Owl. Website's called Owlcam. So here's what they do. And then I've got a question for you that you might be able to answer. But the idea was it's a two-way camera. So the idea is you put this in your car. It's a camera. It's got an LTE connection, and it can store up to 24 hours of HD video. It shoots forward, and it can watch the occupants of the car. It's got LED lights, a two-way speaker, and for the moment, an iOS app. So if you're on an Android, sit tight. They're working on it, but for now, it's iOS. And their point is, you know, your car can get broken into. Well, we'll alert you, and we'll capture photographic evidence of it.
Love that.
But then it's also a you're driving and there's an accident. Yep, we got photographic evidence of that.
The way I drive, not a huge fan of that, but anyway.
Well, you know, it's funny you point that out. And I've driven with you. I thought you were fine. But it's if you think about that, you know, if you remember the early days of forensics, we would advise people don't videotape. If you're going to do anything, take pictures and keep your damn hands out of the picture. Because anything you videotape, I can get another expert that says everything you did was the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
That's my
concern. And therefore, you're wrong.
Well, like if you're driving and you've got, for example, a coffee and a cigar and you're listening to an audiobook. Yeah.
For example.
And you get into an accident, that could work against you, which is why I'm not a huge fan. Although I love it for the security aspect of it, because my cars have been broken into over the years, and it's an opportunistic attack that really could be solved by having live capture inside of the car.
It's not just when you're driving. So it's when you're parked, it's when you're driving, it's all sorts of stuff. It's great. With two teenagers nearing driving age, I went, I'm suddenly a huge fan of this.
Yes,
I want to see who's in the car with them.
Yep.
I want to see where they're going. I want to see how they're driving. I freaking love it. When it finally comes to market, it's bundled up right now, $349, I think it was. You get a year of LTE service. And when it goes to general market, it's $300 for the camera. $10 a month after that. And I thought, well, that'll go in the cars my kids are in. Not mine. But then I read this. So I did the whole, all right, I got to understand how this works. Like, all right, neat. And it's LTE. So that's also nifty. So I kind of dig it. It draws power from the OBD port. So basically your car has got to be 1995 newer, 1996 mm-hmm. or newer. And then I went, oh, not back to the OBD and probably the OBD2 port. Like, now, do you know, is it possible that I can plug into that and really just draw power? Like I'm not necessarily.
That's weird why it would draw power from that port. It's weird. It's a weird place just to draw power. I mean, if you wanted to get vehicle diagnostics in addition to the you know, live video forward and in reverse, I could see that as a use case. Maybe it does. Maybe that's why they want access to the OBD2 port.
Yeah, and it might be something that they've got planned for the future too,
right?
You know, now I said too, I also know some, if 12-volt power is different. Every manufacturer, some will leave it on, some will leave it on for a set period of time, some turn it on, turn it off. Like, there's a variety of ways that the 12-volt works, and I could see then, if I'm trying to solve this problem, I don't want to have to troubleshoot that, and I maybe don't then want to have a battery to it. So the whole thing to me was just kind of interesting with how they were thinking about it. And then I started thinking about, but we don't like the security or the lack of security mm-hmm. on that port. Mm-hmm. And anytime you tap into it, that makes me nervous. But that said, probably not nervous enough not to buy one when it comes to my kids. That's the stuff for the week. There was some stuff that came in right before show in terms of new rounds. We'll cover those next week. That's it. So it's
awesome.
Another episode in the books. We'll be back next week. Next week's good. We've got a couple interviews set up. So I've been teasing it. If you stuck around this long, we are interviewing Sean D'Souza next week, the master of the brain audit himself, and a new technology that's going to replace brainstorming and end crappy meetings. You're going to wait. but you're not going to want to wait. You're going to love it. All right. See everybody next week for more Business Security Weekly.